It's Essential Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer. Next week, legendary broadcast journalist Dan Rather is appearing at Heinz Hall as part of the Pittsburgh Speaker Series presented by Robert Morris University. Mr. Rather worked at CBS for 44 years and anchored the CBS Evening News for 24 of those years. He was involved in covering some of the biggest stories of the 20th century, including the assassination of President Kennedy and the Watergate scandal. He is now the managing editor and anchor of the cable television news magazine Dan Rather Reports. And in 2012, he released his best-selling book, Rather Outspoken, on his life and the state of journalism today. He joins us by phone. Dan Rather, welcome to Essential Pittsburgh.
Thank you very much for having me.
Let's talk about the state of journalism today. I have some words tacked up on the corkboard next to my desk that you are quoted as having said, quote, "We've become too politically correct and basically too afraid. Journalism at its best has guts." What inspired you to say those words, Dan Rather?
Well, my experience as a journalist, as you may know, that I'm one of the lucky ones. I always knew what I wanted to do. Why that's true, I've dealt with the book and not worth going into right now. But ever since I was very, very young, I knew I wanted to be a reporter. I thought I'd wind up being a print reporter. My destiny was not to do that. But as for the quote, it's just my experience, and particularly as time went on in recent years when the journalism landscape in some ways grew larger, but also in many ways when the standards of the craft dropped. There was more trivialization of the news, more politicalization of the news, more corporatization of the news. That it was my observation with myself. I did not accept myself from this criticism and others, that what we lacked was were guts, or if you prefer the metaphor, spine. I once said we needed a spine transplant, and that is there was too many instances which we just went along to get along, did not particularly question the powerful, and so that's the reason I said that. I say it, and I once wrote it.
And why do you suppose we have gotten to that point in journalism, and particularly broadcast journalism?
Well, I think one of the major reasons, not the only one, but one of the major reasons is what I've called the corporatization of news. That is, ever larger entities have taken over our most widespread national distribution news organizations. No more than six very large international corporations now control the truly national distribution of news in the country. Corporations don't like trouble. They don't like controversy. They want to make money. Nothing wrong with that. But they don't see news as a public trust. They don't see news as a public service. They see it only as a money-making apparatus. And because of that, they don't like controversy, and they don't like reporters who cause controversy, for example, investigate corruption, malfeasance in high places. So that has created a from-the-top pressure downward that says, look, just go along to get along. Don't cause any trouble. Just move with the herd. That's one thing. Another thing, quite frankly, I think that because entertainment values have tended to overwhelm news values, many people in the news business, and again, I do not accept myself in this criticism, say, you know what, it's a whole lot easier to put just four people in a room and have them shout at one another than it is to actually go to Afghanistan or Syria or Ukraine and cover the news. So I think that's another reason. We could go on with the list. I'll list one final thing, and that is that when I say the trivialization of the news, that you said, well, why have we reached this point? It is the public itself has shown that if you want to put the Kardashians on, just to take one example, you may get more viewers, you may get more listeners, you may get more readers than if you discuss whether or not we should stay in Afghanistan after the length of time we've been there, and if so, at what level. All of those are factors, but in the end, it also gets down to our responsibility as journalists. For those of us in journalism, we've gotten a little too comfortable, a little too far from what is the true best purpose of quality journalism and integrity, which is to play no favorites and don't bend for anybody, and to operate news as a public service, not in our own interest or in the interest of some corporate entity.
It's Essential Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer, and I'm talking with legendary journalist Dan Rather. So when it comes to a situation like we're seeing in Ukraine, which has been called the most seismic geopolitical event since 9/11, is there a deeper level of coverage that we may not be getting because there aren't the foreign bureaus and the correspondents like someone like Daniel Shore, for example, who opened the CBS bureau in the Soviet Union in 1955 and was doing sit-down interviews with people like Soviet leader Nikita Khrushchev?
Yes. The answer to that is yes. That what's missing in the coverage of the Ukraine, there are some exceptions, but unfortunately few exceptions to this. What's missing is some context, perspective, background, and history. What we tend to get is just who said what to whom this day, and a sort of three-paragraph, at best, coverage. Or maybe, in the case of one of the better programs, you might get 2 or 3 minutes on it. Or, as I mentioned before, you might get a longer discussion in studio. But that's not the kind of in-depth coverage that, as you mentioned, my friend, the late Daniel Shore, and others provided for most of the last half of the 20th century, that we did have many more international, that is to say, foreign bureaus, many more correspondents who lived in the area, correspondents who went and provided the kind of coverage I just mentioned, in depth, with his historical background, have context. It's that kind of deep coverage that the public needs now, and we get far less of it than we've had any time in my lifetime.
During this crisis and analysis of Vladimir Putin, with analysts trying to get into his head, we've been hearing that story of when President George W. Bush confronted Putin about the Kremlin cracking down on freedom of the press in Russia, and Putin replied, "We didn't criticize you when you fired those reporters at CBS." He was referring, of course, to the dismissal of 4 CBS journalists over the discredited report on Bush's National Guard service, after which you were marginalized at the network. What did you make of Putin's comments?
Well, I thought he was, number one, Putin's a very intelligent person. You don't have to like him to recognize an intelligent person. And he's tough, and he was trying. President Bush was giving him a lecture, which he saw as a lecture about freedom of the press, and Putin gave it back to him, saying, in effect, "Well, you're telling me what to do in my country. What about in your country?" When you and he and his White House people did put this pressure on CBS to fire these people because they reported, and let it be said, a true story. He used the word discredited earlier, and I'm not arguing with him, but the story was true. That President Bush and his family had used his father's influence to keep him from having to go to Vietnam. The story was true. The controversy was over the process by which the truth was reached. At any rate, Putin was just trying to give it back to him. That the surprise to me, quite frankly, was that President Bush, if you remember, told him it'd be better for you if you didn't go into that, and Putin dropped the subject.
Well, and as you mentioned, the essence of the story back in 2004, when CBS reported it, was true. So, at the end of the day, were you treated fairly by CBS?
Well, perhaps it can be understood when I say I don't think so, and I think the record clearly indicates that. But you know, it's been a long time ago, and this is behind me now. I think anyone who's was interested or is interested in it knows pretty much what the facts were, and was that big government in the form of the Bush White House at the time didn't like a true story that was reported, and they sought to have the network get rid of the people who were responsible for that story. And the network, because it has so many things it needs in Washington, it needs laws passed and laws stopped before they get passed, it needs regulatory aid. The corporation needs things out of the powerful in Washington, and it was easier for them to fire and let go of the people responsible for the story than it was to back the story. My only point about all of this, and I say this with a smile, I'm not here to argue, is the story was true. It wasn't a matter of just the essence. The story was true. That it was the process by which we reached the story was the weak point. We were attacked on that. Those of us who were involved in the story lost. That's the way it goes sometimes. But when we talk about having guts and having some spine, nobody in television had touched that story, and we did, and we paid the price for it, and so be it.
It's Essential Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer. I'm talking with legendary journalist Dan Rather. That nightly ritual so many of us grew up with, Mr. Rather, of sitting down with your parents and watching the nightly network news is not as much of a ritual as it once was. How long do you see it continuing in its present form, the 30-minute network newscast run in some places at 5:30? Sometimes it's on at 7, but it used to be a gathering point.
Well, my fear is that the answer to your question is not long. You said, how much longer does this last? There are days when I can see that perhaps one or more of the major, truly national distribution television networks will continue the evening news. But in this day where the Internet increasingly is where most people get most of the news most of the time, it's hard for me to see how going forward, let's say that all three of the ABC, NBC, CBS constellation of networks continue to carry the early evening half hour. I can see where it may survive on one of those networks. It's hard for me to see how it survives on all three, although I want it to be clear, I think it is a public service, and I hope it survives. But your question is, how likely is it? I think it's not very likely. I think it's more likely as time goes along that with at least two of the biggest three television news networks, that the over-the-airways networks, that at least two of the three will cease doing it. And the reason I say that, if two stop doing it, it might be a business model that could survive for one. But I have to be honest and say I doubt it.
We just marked the 50th anniversary of the assassination of President Kennedy, an event that is said to have been when network television news came of age and became the dominant news medium. Do you agree with that assessment?
I do. I think it was that at that moment, the Kennedy assassination, that television became the dominant place where most people got most of their news. Before that, it had been a combination of newspapers and radio. And I do agree with that.
You and CBS spent a lot of time investigating who killed JFK, and early on in that investigative process, Dan Rather, who did you think killed JFK, and is it the same thing that you believe today?
Basically, yes, it is the same thing that I believe today. I believe that Lee Harvey Oswald was, I think it's very clear, the facts demonstrate he definitely was a shooter. I think he was the only shooter. I think there was one gun, one shooter, and I think that was Lee Harvey Oswald. Now, as for the second half of the equation, did anybody put him up to it? Was anybody else involved in helping him do that? I do agree that the facts are murkier on that side, but after investigating it, time after time after time, and spending a lot of CBS's money trying to prove otherwise, I think it was Oswald and Oswald alone.
I've heard people say that the Kennedy family believes that it was a mob hit. What do you make of that? Have you heard that?
Certainly, I've heard it. You know, there's so many conspiracy theories. You've heard just about everything, including the he was shot by aliens. But on this, there is no conclusive evidence that the Kennedy family believed that. In the early days after the assassination, while I've just said there's no definitive proof that any member of the family thought that, that I know of, that certainly the family must have speculated, as many other people did, about who might have done it, and the possibility of a mob hit was probably mentioned by somebody in the family in the same way they said, well, listen, was it the Cubans? Was it the Russians? Was it a mob hit? They probably went down the same list the rest of us did. But, you know, is it possible that the mob was mobbed? Yes, anything is possible. It's impossible to disprove a negative. But in this case, I've said it. I don't think the evidence is there, and I don't think
You are still working at 82, as I mentioned, hosting Dan Rather Reports, remaining active as a broadcast journalist. Some people might be wondering, are you ever going to retire?
Well, I don't know. You know, God and my health will have a lot to say in determining that. I have a passion for covering news. I always have, as long as I have my health and God's grace, I intend to be working some way, somewhere, covering news. I do know, you know, I can be dumb as a fence post about a lot of things, but I'm at least smart enough to know how lucky and blessed I am to be able to work at my passion this late in life.
Well, we're certainly in no hurry to see you go, and we're only sorry that our time with you has come to an end. But Dan Rather has been our guest. He is appearing at Heinz Hall as part of the Pittsburgh Speaker Series presented by Robert Morris University next Wednesday, March 26th. Dan Rather, thank you so much for joining us on Essential Pittsburgh. We appreciate it.
Thank you very much.
Coming up, more Essential Pittsburgh on 90.5 WESA.